Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I'm so excited for this conversation. Whereas most of you know me, I am passionate about moving the industry forward through construction technologies. But we have so many people reaching out to us, and we're very, very selective on how and when we have these conversations because we don't need another podcast of just saying you need more technology in construction. In fact, I think in a lot of cases, we need less. And the main message that we're going to talk about today is that qualifying inputs to your process that construction technology can really align with. And how this is going to benefit you is that we need to talk about how we align the risk incentives and meet construction where they are. This was one of my favorite things on all the pre-interviews that we were getting this whole thing teed up with Mr. Wiley Jones that we're going to talk about next. But we talked about how you don't get rewarded for pre-construction or onboarding. And it's really hard to do that part of we always talk about beginning with the end in mind. You get rewarded for deliverables. And that's what we talk about every day on the Art of Construction Master Facilitators and our tagline of we are not the MFers that you think of in construction. And we have to understand like cash flow statements that need to be larger than the budgets, but you have to figure out how to meet construction where it is and the people that do that. And my perspectives is anyone that Alice Leung recommends, I want to talk with. And that's where this kindling of all of these fireside chats start. Think back of show 266 titled Funding the Innovators. And that's where we talked about Alice and Brick and Mortar Ventures. And we've done several different really cool companies that have stepped up to the plate and have got to know Alice and the team, or different panel discussions like show 274 talking about successful investment strategies for employees and entrepreneurs, where it was a really cool, bringing many of the master facilitators coming together, as I've done over 350 of these. And it's cool where Phil Reed talked about don't go to architecture school to be an architect, when, of course, that's kind of a pun on, talking about the whole evolution that we went through with Enscape and talking through all of those and having Alice in the middle of, at the end of the day, Tribe, money talks and bullshit walks. And we got to put all that stuff together, and we're going to do just that and get to know Wiley and have as much fun as possible. What's your favorite beverage?
It's got to be coffee. That's a pretty easy one. It depends on the coffee and depends on the day, but pretty much anything with caffeine in it is a beverage, top of the shelf beverage for me.
I get a lot of that from the construction tech startups, right? You got to keep putting a lot of time listening and learning and talking through that. But what's your favorite place you've traveled?
Oh man, that's hard. I really, really love Japan. I think Japan is just an incredible country. I lived in China for a while. I also love China. I think it was amazing. And then I also just love like the American, kind of like the Rockies, especially like a little bit west of, Colorado, like Utah. I think Zion, the national park there, is like one of the most amazing places on earth.
Well, I want to challenge. Give me one story from living in China.
Oh, man. One really funny one was, there was a hotel that I would stay at pretty regularly close to our factory. And there was one time I was eating dinner on this mezzanine of kind of the hotel overlooking the area. And I was like, I don't think this guy's stopping at the light. And cause you can see out in kind of the traffic, and this guy just blazes through this light and drives straight into the hotel lobby. He just crashed straight into it. And the best part was no one even like batted an eye. Like most of the people in the restaurant kind of all looked over, peered over, and they went back to eating. And I was like, okay. It's like that was different, which is pretty funny.
Awesome. Well, we're going to unpack that a little bit when we get to hear your whole story. But what do you like to do outside of the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah. I really love, I love music. Started playing guitar a number of years ago. Love playing the guitar. Love reading. I also love listening to podcasts, especially ones about companies, people that build things, really any kind of things that are being built. I'm just such a huge fan of hearing stories like that.
Well, awesome. Well, Wiley Jones, it's an honor to have you here. What's your story that led you being a co-founder at DOS?
So I think the 2-minute drill of it is that I went to school, studied engineering, starry-eyed, naive, went out into the world, started working as an electrical engineer, thinking I would go and do all these amazing things, building stuff. And that was part of the truth, I guess, in reality. I went to China, worked with a bunch of contract manufacturers, was making electronics, and spent a lot of time, putting in the effort and the legwork to try to build stuff. And it turns out that, when you're building physical stuff, you have to do a lot of work to litigate the state of like what happened, what is happening, what will happen. And the world of electronics is not that distinct from the world of construction in a lot of ways, where you spend a lot of time going line by line through documents and trying to understand what is going on so that you can actually go and do the work that you need to do. And so that led me down this really long path where so many of the tools that we were being, I would say not forced to use, but the things that we had to do, it was never designed like around the ergonomics of like the real world work that was being done on the factory floor or in warehouses, or as we were trying to get things across customs and, through borders out of Shenzhen into Hong Kong, like even just things like that. I'm like, oh, clearly the person who worked on all this stuff, they never had touched any of these real world things in their life, like, or else they would never have done it this way. And that led me to, basically I saw this problem over and over again. I thought it was always unique, but once I started seeing it pattern matching over and over, I was like, okay, like, let's go and look at what this is like in the media business and seeing if we can solve this problem more broadly. And that's how we started working on DOS.
I love that. And I want to start, as I say in the intro, as a disruptor and in micro-influencer, but I love the disruption part of kind of kicking this stuff off, because you and I had some really great conversations leading up to this and good candid conversations, and why I'm honored to have you on the podcast. But I want to start by saying on your website, you have a bold statement when you first look at it. And I want you to talk through about how have you earned the right to say, we are the ERP that was promised, a technology partner you deserve, and go live in minutes, not months.
Yeah, I'll start with the first part. And it's really about this promise, which actually connects into being a technology partner. So I think there's this, if we look kind of back at the narrative around how ERPs have broadly made their way into the market, there's always this like end vision in mind for how they're going to help and transform businesses. And it's something that's being sold to the end customer a lot of times by sales reps or, people inside of these large organizations and brands that are, we think about them as these enterprise software giants. And I think, if you look at the pretty commonly cited statistics, people say like anywhere between 50 and 75% of these things fail, in the implementation phase. And I was so shocked by this when I learned more and more about it. And I was like, well, how can someone, not live up to their promise 75% of the time and be considered a great best-in-class solution? I was like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And so what we inspected and scrutinized, and why we think we have a right to actually say that we are the ERP that was promised, is that the underlying cause of that is actually an alignment of incentives. It's that they basically will start taking and extracting a lot of value from their customers before they give anything in return. And we just completely invert that process. We look at our relationship with our customers as being a technology partner first and foremost. We get them up and running. And then eventually our customers ask, wait, so how do we pay for this? How do we get charged for what you're doing for us, right? And we start contracting and figuring out, well, here are the things we're going to go build for you. Here's what you're going to get out of it. Once you get money or once you get value out of this, and you can actually start doing your job in the ecosystem of what we build for you, then we will start figuring out how you pay us. And, it's a completely like backwards perspective. And plenty of people tell us we're insane for doing it this way. But anyone who has ever built anything, they know that this is how a large part of the world works, is that you get paid when you deliver value. And so we are structuring software the same way.
And that was the part on our pre-interviews where I was like, I raised my hand and be like, I was really excited for his answer on this. But I commend you, Wiley, for how you answered that of like, I'm constantly, whenever I look at this lens, is saying you got to meet the people, the municipalities, and the businesses where they are. And that's how construction works, is this age-old mindset is you're only as good as your last job, of what you produce to earn the next job. And it's really hard to answer those questions of like paying for onboarding and paying to build tools when that's not how construction mindsets work, right? So right. I'm super excited to have you in the Master Facilitators and see where this thing goes, because there's plenty of construction technology tools out there that are not being adopted because they're just say, I won't talk to you until you pay me. And that's a slippery slope. So let's unpack that. But first, you know, thank you for letting me disrupt and challenge you to kick this thing off. Let's unpack, talk to us what DOS is all about.
So I'll kind of start like in a bit of an abstract and vague answer, and then we can really like refine it down. But at a high level, you know, construction is not the only segment of customers we serve. We serve consumer packaged goods companies. There's a peanut butter company that we work with. There's a company that you know, makes metal and glass. There's a company that you know, they produce cauliflower puffs, like and they sell into grocery stores. So we serve a wide range of businesses. We serve a furniture company, and so, you know, in the most abstract form, we think of a lot of these businesses as handling some kind of value chain where they're taking a bunch of physical inputs, they're producing goods, and they have this flow of goods into and out of their business. They have this flow of dollars that's connected to that when they're paying their vendors and they're getting paid by their customers. And then there's these pieces of data that kind of get thrown off, you know, and like tossed as these processes are running in the real world. And we just help consolidate that all down into one place. Flow of goods in and out, flow of money in and out, flow of data in and out. And so in the world of construction, I think so many people are like, okay, that makes sense. Like, we have all this pre-construction, we go through and actually do implementation and installation, we go and work with GCs, and there's bills getting sent back and forth and emails getting sent back and forth. We help consolidate as much of that down as possible so that there's as minimal human effort to reconciling those pieces of information, which we know is massively time consuming.
Yeah, and I want to pause there and jump in and say, when you articulated that, it's like, man, it seems so simple. Goods, dollars, data.
Yep.
But I would challenge to say is that's why I was excited to have you on here to say, I raise my hand and say, I'm one to say, you know, the riches are in the niches, and you got to really have, I need to be speaking to people who understand. For me, day in, day out, I own and operate a window and door company. So you better really understand windows and doors and construction and architects and how to build better buildings and system build and all these things we've been talking about. But then I've been thinking about this ever since our pre-interview, and you know, things, you got to look at it differently. And what I started looking at this differently, I said, let's reverse this. Let's talk about data to match up with the right dollars and then put the goods to that. And it's a lot of the coaching I've been given of like, build the right process, then put the best people into those processes. And why I'm really taking the time to lean into that is because I'm working with a lot of people, and we spend a lot of time talking in a circle about why we're so different and special in our goods, and you need to do all these specialty things, and we can't even get off the ground. And then we say, oh, wait, I'm not making money, and I just spent a year talking about something, and then I don't know how I'm managing these dollars. So data, dollars, and goods, I think, is that reverse engineering of kind of how everything needs to work. Am I on to something there of how you've been going down this path?
So the thing that you're describing is something that we've like intuitively come to realize. And it's actually how we drive all of our customers through successful implementations. Like, you know, we've basically, as you said, inverting this process of data, dollars, goods. Data is always where we start. So, And it also helps our customers, because then we take up as little of their time as possible. They go, well, what do you know about, you know, windows and doors? I'm like, I don't know that much about windows and doors. But if you show me all of your data, we will figure out a very large percent of it very quickly. Because it turns out that if I say, hey, you take in quotes and bids and estimates, and then you go and produce jobs, and you make work orders, and sometimes you do purchase orders, and you're buying finished goods, sometimes you buy raw materials, and then you fabricate your finished goods. You don't know what I'm talking about. I could be talking about walls. I could be talking about, you know, something related to glass. It doesn't really matter. Like, I'm talking about these kind of abstract pieces. And then we build this mental model, which we then compile down into a data model, and then we put it in our system. But the thing that we sample from, and we kind of collect these vignettes and stories, is we look at the actual data and be like, okay, I'm gonna go look at your last like year of data that you guys have, and we'll just try to pattern match it all. And then we ask a lot of questions, and we try to consolidate it into, you know, an hour of time, half an hour of time. We just go, Devin, who are the people on your team that deal with this? I just need 30 minutes, and I have 50 questions I'm gonna burn through with them, and I will have a very good understanding of like 95% of your data. And from there, then I can show them a draft of like, here's what we think is right. And they go, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. These things need to be fixed, but the rest of it actually looks okay. And like from there, we're already in a place that's way further along than I would say majority of other companies are able to get to.
Okay, so I want to unpack that a little bit more. So you said, give me 30 minutes, I got 50 questions, and then I'm going to ask this, and then I'm going to, however you've compiled your data, you have some kind of intake process to make it really simple to fast track to for you to meet the customer where they are. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right. You used the word, which we use internally. It's a reverse engineering. It's basically like taking these, you know, these small, like you said, these kind of vignettes and these small stories inside of these work orders and these jobs and these back and forth emails you have with your customers or your suppliers or whoever it is. We can see these stories about how your business fits together. And we can kind of reverse engineer what your process is by just looking at the data that gets thrown off. Because that tells us the story of, well, when you say a job, what does a job actually mean? When you say a work order, what actually is a work order to your company? I refer to it as the translation of semantics. Everyone has a very, you know, when people say their business is so unique, most of it comes down to like, when you say this thing, what do you literally mean? What actually is occurring? And if we can ask that question of, we can scrutinize that, you know, for I'd say 10 to 30 things, we get a lot of really good answers that will help us understand the business in its totality.
Cool. So unpack a little bit more about kind of the mainframe when you say, and talk through a little bit where I think we all have heard CRM, ERP, enterprise solution, all these different things. On the preener, we were kind of talking about the different like kind of main buckets, but just kind of talk through in generic and then what you've learned of like when you say on the intro when we talked about go live in minutes and then we're going to unpack my whole silver bullet comment I'm always talking about.
So the I would say the big buckets for us are the flow of goods kind of distills down into three pieces for us. And it's really just like we're focused on procurement, we're focused on order management, which is, you know, kind of the intake process. And then the inventory, which a lot of times or some kind of value added production, if a company's manufacturing their own goods. Those are the big buckets.
Yeah, unpack that on the preener. It was fascinating when you were doing an intake and you gave me the story about, well, you are manufacturing when you say you're not. And
right.
Then the other part I should have already brought up is you and your founder, how did you get to the niches of construction when you say you kind of have this broad net? And I think those two things are really, really important because I always talk about the riches and the niches and the one thing you're going to answer at the end of this podcast, because this podcast is specifically designed for our master facilitators, builders and affiliates to build better buildings. So I do want you to really speak to them. And selfishly, me and all the other team that are trying to do this every day of saying, it sounds great what you just said. In reality, it's really broken on putting those things together because I think people are jaded by what they don't know what they don't know and what they think they know.
Yeah. So let me start with some very specifics. So, you know, we talked to this customer a while ago who came to us and they had a bunch of problems in their construction or, you know, they're a subcontractor. They do a lot of installation of, interior walls, glass. I don't know the exact technical words for this, but, you know, I don't know what they really think of themselves as, but they think of themselves as a wall and glass company. And, when we were talking to them, they're like, oh, no, we don't manufacture anything. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Let's start looking at all your data. And I start seeing all these work orders, and they're like, oh, no, that's stuff in the warehouse. And I'm like, okay, well, what are they doing? They go, oh, they're assembling a bunch of these, like, you know, inputs of these pieces of glass we get. And, you know, we're going to this other factory, and we're getting a bunch of metal, and we're assembling these, you know, these interior walls. I'm like, that's what manufacturing is. Like, you know, you actually need to be able to track all of that. And they go, yeah, you know, it is kind of hard when we take in all these materials and we're trying to go produce all these items and get them out to the job sites. I'm like, yeah, it's hard because you're not tracking it like that, because you don't think you're doing any manufacturing. Like that's like the fundamental gap here. And it's back to that point that we just made earlier, which is that it's about understanding the semantics of what they think they're doing inside of their business and trying to map that into what we understand kind of the general framework for businesses is. And you know, maybe even kind of short circuiting to your teeing up question, is there is no shortcut to figuring that out. We have to spend time talking to our customers. It's about being on the ground with them, like physically going to their job sites or going to their like actual warehouses and being like, what are you doing? How are you doing this? And let's reverse engineer this process so that there will be as little waste of human time as possible, because people don't want to be sending emails back and forth about like, hey, you know, this job came through. Did you go through the work orders and make sure that the spec sheets are correct for every single detail? Oh, no, I haven't done that. That's a huge waste of my time. You know, I need to go and I'll go do that next week. And therefore, then the job gets delayed. Those types of things are what we can help eliminate by trying to make each piece of this as connected to data as possible. But there is no silver bullet to figuring out the inputs to that. You have to qualify them rigorously by just like physically going and being present, talking to your customers, talking to the people that do the actual work, and understanding what it is they actually do.
And unpack the story you told me about your co-founder about construction and his background, of your background in electronics and his background, and coming together. Because I think that's really important as you two, as the master facilitators of this conversation.
Yeah. So when I first started working in the company, I wasn't sure really which industries would be most impacted. I had seen this in the world of electronics, manufacturing electronics products. They have tons of inputs. You work with, you know, contract manufacturers, you work with warehouses and logistics companies to ship your products all around the world. I was like, okay, let's go find other companies that are similar. My co-founder and I connected. You know, we had known each other through university, and then we connected later on. I was like, you know, learning more about what he'd been working on. And he went from working on, you know, basically these like large scale data center software to then working on construction billing. And when he was working on construction billing, he was like, yeah, we kept running into these problems over and over again, where we kept having to integrate with these ERPs. And it turns out that none of the data in the ERPs was correct. None of the people knew how to use them. He's like, so we were stuck because we were trying to integrate a billing product into a thing that was supposed to be a system of record, but it didn't actually store the records that were real, and none of it was up to date. And so we were hamstrung. But this entire process of moving data back and forth between these systems was so difficult. And it was all difficult because the ERP that had been implemented for these companies was never designed around helping facilitate the real world work. It had been only designed around, you know, I think, kind of, you know, our kind of cynical perspective is it had been designed around what a few engineers' perspective of what these systems should look like is. And that was where we were like, there is a massive opportunity to go fix this. And that's where we, you know, really jumped off.
But on your website, you talk about all the tools you need in one platform, which sounds so perfect. And boy, I wish that was the case. And maybe I'm the one that's totally missing the boat, but I don't think that's the case, because I'm working to build this with a group of individuals myself to just figure out how we build businesses better to have these sources of truth. I say no silver bullet in construction technology. You say all the tools you need in one platform. Tell me how that works.
Yeah. The idea of having all the tools in one platform, let's say, you know, it doesn't sound as nice, but let's say 80 to 90% of the tools in one platform, and the final 10 to 20%, we can use our what I call primitives, kind of these base tools, and we can augment them to create the actual specific tools that you need. It's the same way that when you actually, you know, you look at your actual toolkit, like physical toolkits, they can get very, very large. But then you also have these common concepts. You're like, all right, a wrench is a wrench, and then you have different sizes. You know, a bit is a bit, and you have different sizes, or you have different configurations of it. And you have a, you know, you have an impact driver, and it has all of these different ways that you can set it up and configure it. It's like, well, fundamentally, it is underneath it. There's this thing that allows you to do work and go to drill it through something, or go and, you know, punch holes in something, or whatever it is. But like, the foundation of it is the same. It's like a battery that's connected to this like high torque motor that can go and drive stuff, right? That is how we think of building software tools, is we say we need to build the common set of primitives that is most important. If we can build those common set of primitives and apply them to the end application that is what our customers are seeing, like, you know, in their actual line of work, we can get almost to the, you know, comprehensiveness of all tools. We're talking like very, very near converging to all tools. That just doesn't sound as nice when you're marketing it.
When you talk about an impact drill, where now there's those companies that have been manufacturing that, and they are now looking at saying, with the way you can now charge and keep track of your tools with technology and start to build this data, they can help in ways we never thought about, right? And yeah. So that's that source of truth of this open data exchange of trying to figure out of how do we work with those companies, but also make it our own, of this kind of David and Goliath thing. It's not against, it's how do we work together is really my whole thing when I start talking about how this one platform works. What's your take to that?
It's actually all about people, which is maybe kind of a different direction from some of the points we've been making earlier, but it brings me back to what you said really early on, which is about building these networks of master facilitators. And I think it's just about building a community of people who have a common vision for wanting to make improvements and wanting to make things better. And I think if we fundamentally divide the world, if you have to split a line between like what separates the world into two parts, it is for the people who want to make things better and the other people who are just like totally fine with how things are. And if you can find people who want to make things better, you can build coalition around, like you're talking about, these data exchanges. You can build coalition around saying, well, you know, we have all these like really cool RFID tracking now on items and devices, and let's make it so that we can pull all that data in and get more data into whatever tool that we're using so that we can have a better understanding of how our job is going, how work is being done inside of the factories, how work is being done outside of us, you know, as we interact with our customers and customer support. Under the hood, they're all the same thing, which is about making progress and eliminating human waste, human effort, doing higher quality work at lower costs. Like, that is what all of it is about. But the commonality between all these things is finding people who are competent and have the drive and desire to go and manifest their will on the earth. You know, that's what we're in a shortage of, is people like that, not really the technology itself.
And there is this community that the Art of Construction that I'm kind of leading and trying to build along all the Wileys coming together to be able to do what you just said. I loved your reference that's super relevant about the interior glass and wall company that they're kind of taking a kit of parts to build interior solutions and assembling and blending on-site and off-site construction, which is there's so much more system-built construction done than we think. It's just not systemized. On our pre-interview, we were talking about, I may butcher this on my tee up for you, but it was like an ingredients or beverage company. And you were talking about like taking those, how it was fascinating of taking their recipes and different parts, just like the glass and the walls. Can you talk a little bit more of bridging the gap between, you know, construction companies and externally of kind of blend that of who are some of your best partners? Because I really think sometimes we need to take some time to learn from the outside to really leap forward internally with our teams.
Yeah. So I challenge all of our customers to do this when we go through these exercises with them early on in meeting them, is asking these questions of them, which is like, what makes you unique and special? You know, like what is hard about your business? Because there's always something hard about every company. There are things that make them unique that separate them from even people in their own industry. You know, one wall and glass company is very distinct from another, and you have to find those idiosyncrasies. Once you tease those things out, then you kind of like, let's put it up on the wall and kind of try to objectively scrutinize the abstract version of it, which is, Well, you have these walls that you're making. They have a bunch of pieced parts. You're going to, let's say, 10 different vendors and buying those. You hold common stock of some of those items. That sounds a lot to me like this company we work with that's a peanut butter company and a nut butter company, and they're buying almonds, and then sometimes they're buying packaging, and then they're going and assembling this with co-packers and, you know, co-manufacturers, and it's the same as you guys working with contract manufacturers. I'm like, under the hood, it's a, you know, a bill of materials, and they call it a recipe, but like functionally it acts the same way, right? So we start trying to scrutinize what makes a company unique, and then almost backing that out, again, that reverse engineering of, well, let's put this in its abstract forms. And once we put it in the abstract forms, it just forces our customers, and it, as a part of this exercise, to think about them not through the bias of like the job that they do, but more about like what are the systems that are in place. And man, it's such an unlock for folks, because I just find that they can think so much more clearly about the inputs and outputs of their business that way.
Oh man, I love that. There's my tagline for this podcast is, I call it a bill of materials, you call it a recipe. We're both trying to make a buck and have as much fun as possible, right?
That's right. Yep. That's so, exactly right.
So the other punchline of like that really got me thinking of as I got getting to know your story as we work on closing this thing out, and you know, big shout out to Alice and the Master Facilitator Network of so many great people coming together and listening and sharing these stories, is really to call ourselves out. And I think I've been living this way quite a bit lately, is that I'm kind of in that gooey middle, right? I've been in 25 years in supply chain, and I'm very guilty of like, oh yeah, I've been through this. You hear you're going to go down this path and it's never going to work, right? Because construction is so different, right? In fact, I've had great podcasts about that. I think of Alice Technologies and tying in where he's like 20 years ago, where they're just like, construction's going to be like banking overnight because banking figured out how to digitize. And here we are 20 years later, and we're actually have the computational power and getting people to come together. And it was really a refreshing to say, why am I struggling with this so much? And the answer is you should. But the question I want to ask you from your perspectives of, I call it bill of materials, you call it a recipe, and Wiley's in the middle trying to just help people run successful businesses. Is construction so different, Wiley?
So we have this thing that we have inside of our company that we used when we talk to our customers, when I call it the matrix. And it's kind of like that scene in the Matrix, if you're familiar with where Neo's seeing all the numbers flying at him, right? And it's our representation of every industry that we work with, and then the sets of problems they have and where they all overlap, and like where they're similar and where they're different. And it helps us really characterize the things that are unique in every industry. And it turns out that there are things that are unique about every industry, but I would not say that they are, maybe our opinions on this are conventional. So a few things that I find interesting dimensionally are, when you think about what makes construction distinct from, let's say, these food and beverage companies, and what makes construction distinct from like an industrials business or something, it's not about like the semantics around, well, we call it a purchase order and you guys call it a stock order, or you guys, you know, we call it a bill of materials and you guys have these recipes and you're using almonds and cream, and we're using glass, and we're using, you know, aluminum. Those are not the things that are interesting to me. What's interesting to me is instead where we say, well, what's the scale at which this thing occurs, the time scale or the dollar value scale? So in the case of a, let's say, this peanut butter company we work with, they fulfill dozens and dozens of wholesale orders every day. These orders need to be picked, packed, and shipped in a matter of a few minutes. That is not how construction works most of the time. We're talking about multi-million dollar orders. They take place over months. They get phased and billed out in increments a lot of times. They're working with teams of, you know, dozens of people. So each unit of delivery of value occurs on a much longer time horizon. That is a massive difference in dimensionality. It turns out that's exactly how large equipment manufacturers think about their business. It's actually almost even kind of similar to a lot of times how like large, you know, if you think of like any large industrial machine, manufacturing business, that is also about how they think about production. Think of these big jobs and delivering big pieces of equipment. So in a lot of ways, we think of those kinds of companies as being similar. But when we look at the inputs to like manufacturing something, well, the inputs to manufacturing food is actually very similar to the inputs to manufacturing a lot of construction equipment or a lot of construction, you know, pre-constructed, prefabricated materials. But mm-hmm. the end delivery to end customers is very, very different. So we have to kind of really break it down into its parts and be very analytically rigorous and very intellectually honest about what really makes something unique.
Honesty is the key to the word. The one word I'd say of everything you were just talking about that is such a misnomer in construction is speed. Mm. And it's got to this fast, fast world. And the back of our loading dock at our main warehouse in Denver, there's a big billboard above it that is a quote of one of my passions of maintaining the old spirit of the West, but moving things forward. And it's by a gentleman named Wyatt Earp. And if you think about what he did, and there's all these documentaries I've been watching, and it goes like this. Speed is good, but accuracy is everything. And you got to stop and think about that, Tribe, because the whole speed but just in time, it's about getting this kit of parts to come together. Whether you're making a candy bar or a 10-story building, it's the right time to speed up and slow down. So one mm-hmm. of our main core values in the Art of Construction Master Facilitator community is one that I've really pushed to all of my internal team, and it's a good reminder that people can listen and understand where Devin is coming from. Because Devin is moves fast. He's a big picture. He just, if he gets to know Wiley, he's just going to do whatever he can to make Wiley happy. But one of my great mentors who's been a guest podcast on the podcast many times, Matt McMullen, who's one of our executive directors on our system built construction, licensed architect in 5 states, been doing this for a long time. And he sat in there and we were having a conversation kind of like this in the past. And I was just like, we got to go. And he said, Devin, you have the perfect one of four core values, but you got to tweak it. And I was like, He said, Devin, all you say is GSD, get shit done. Yep. And he said, we got to add a little T before we GSD. And these conversations are so helpful for expressives like me that I will express to say I'm calling myself out to say garbage in is garbage out. Mm-hmm. Speed is good. Yeah. Accuracy is everything. But what we're really saying is if you don't know what you're trying to solve, then how are you going to solve the problem? And if you figured out that problem that Wiley is saying on an intake to say what makes you unique and different, and you really have that figured out, then they can really help you go get shit done because they're going to thoughtfully help you do that. And I think that's the whole part of like in construction because it's so hard. Because everybody is so tasked to do so much with so little time and money that it's this constant pushing the envelope and it's just this, you know, picking up the poo along the way in so many cases. Mm-hmm. But construction technology is here to help with that, right? So, mm-hmm. Wiley, I genuinely appreciate you bringing these perspectives. If nothing else, hopefully others are listening to this to say, if you're having problems on a job site, you might need to do a little T before you do the next GSD. Mm-hmm. What's your take to that, Wiley?
I think that it's it's what I said earlier. It's this intellectual honesty, and it's really painful for a lot of people because it's terrifying to think critically about the state of your business and why things are the way they are. It's really scary to have to do it, but I think this is what, you know, I think this is what's going to move the industry forward. Or really all the industries that we work with, we see the same thing is when companies better understand themselves and they are rigorous and honest about the things that are good and bad, and they really focus on those inputs, then they can drive better outcomes. But the T before the GSD, that's why we spend pretty much all of our time with like, how do we set up the problem? How do we characterize the problem? How do we understand their businesses deeply before we even try to make any recommendation on anything we can do to help? Because if you don't understand it at all, or if you understand a part of it, you will miss the forest for the trees. And that's extremely dangerous in industries that are building buildings, building homes for people.
100%. But now let's close this thing out. We'll make sure we put links in the show notes to how to learn more about you and all your company and get connected through the Master Facilitator community. For the future, as we're always trying to move this thing forward, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
I think this is very specific for construction because there's so much labor that goes into the building of physical things. I think there's going to be a renaissance over the next probably, let's say, 10 to 20 years that's using a lot of the new technology that's going to basically enable people that are actually doing the work to level up their ability to move data around and consolidate information down so that all the way down to, you know, individual guys on site and the foreman and stuff, they have a composite picture of everything happening in the job so that they're able to understand the state of where everything's at. And it doesn't require knowing how to operate a complex system. Instead, it's just going to be asking simple questions. I think that's going to happen in literally every industry. And I think that technology is going to be one of the main drivers of this. And it's going to really fulfill a lot of the promises early on, which is big systems would say, well, if you're on site and you got your iPad and tablet or whatever, and you can look up and see where everything's at, I think almost all of that aspect of it will go away, and it'll be people being able to ask very simple questions and get very, very accurate answers back on what is occurring, what's going on. And it's really going to meet construction teams where they are physically, in a way that they haven't been able to before. I think that's going to be a massive, massive unlock for the industry.
Fascinating. Yeah, and we're honored to be leading that very thing of meeting the people, the municipalities, and the businesses where they are. What is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business, Wiley?
Yeah, I think it's just the introspection around trying to understand your business in specificity, in the specifics, but then backing it out into those abstract things. And that's my challenge to everyone we work with is like, try to look at your business objectively and figure out what are the inputs, what are the outputs, what is this similar to, what is hard about what we do. And it's a stressful and painful exercise to be this honest and raw, but man, is it powerful to look at your business this way.
Oh man, what gold. Wiley, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your story and help leading the Master Facilitators to use construct technology to build better buildings.
Thanks, Devin.